Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, October 2nd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 128, starting with the third paragraph, He is Not So Unbalanced, through three paragraphs ending with He Has Spiritual Justification for Doing So. And the comments will be on all the three paragraphs. Our readers for today are the 12 Steps, Laura H., and the 12 Traditions, Nan K., and the readers of the text today are Sherry K.B. and Eileen M. The share ID for Monday, October 1st, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,982. That's 11982. And for Tuesday, today, October 2nd, our 7 a.m. meeting is 11,984. That's 11984. And our newcomer greeter is Melanie C., and our announcements person is Stephanie L. Thank you all for your service. All right. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Laura A. to read the 12 steps. Laura, press star 1 to unmute. Laura.
Well, if she's not there, I can do that.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll have Melanie C. do it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thank you, Melanie C., and I will now ask Nan K. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Well, thank you, Nan Kay. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone again. And in order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speaker's, should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 128, the third paragraph. He is not so unbalanced. Reading through three paragraphs, ending with he has spiritual justification for doing so, and I will now ask Sherry KB to get us started.
Good morning, Ma. Good morning, everybody. Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. He is not so unbalanced as they might think. Many of us have experienced Dad's elation. We have indulged in spiritual intoxication, like a gaunt prospector, belt drawn in over the last ounce of food, our pick struck gold. Joy at our release from a lifetime of frustration knew no bounds. Father feels he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure for himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product. If the family cooperates, Dad will soon see that he is suffering from a distortion of values. He will perceive that his spiritual growth is lopsided, that for an average man like himself, a spiritual life does not include his family obligations may not be so perfect after all. If the family will appreciate that Dad's current behavior is but a phase of his development, all will be well. In the midst of an understanding and sympathetic family, these vagaries of Dad's spiritual infancy will quickly disappear. The opposite may happen should the family condemn and criticize. Dad may feel that for years his drinking has placed him on the wrong side of every argument, but that now he has become a superior person with God on his side. If the family persist in the criticism, the fallacy may take a still greater hold on Father. Instead of treating the family as he should, he may retreat further into himself and feel he has spiritual justification for doing so. And I'll put myself on a timer. So in the first paragraph, Phyllis, as he struck gold, and that the joy of release from a lifetime of frustration knew no bounds. That, you know, reminds me of getting into this program and, you know, losing the weight and, but, you know, getting into the step work, which has limitless, getting connected to a higher power. I've struck something better than gold. I mean, just this lifetime of change for me and how I used to live and how I've changed and grown and continue to enlarge my spiritual life with my higher power is a wonderful thing for me. And it's just, it's like, to me, the key to the city. It's just an amazing way to live. It's just the, what's important, that I have to live my life, the rest of my life, this way, and that if I want to keep this, I have to give it away. I have to, you know, work with others, and while I work with others, I grow more useful to my higher power, and the more I connect with my higher power, the more useful I become in helping other people, and that's such an important thing. And it's, and this part that it says, for the rest of his life, insists on giving away the entire product. So, you know, people go, oh, wow, Sherry, you know, how'd you lose the weight? And, you know, how'd you do that? But it's the entire package. So it means to me the entire thing, not only my abstinence, but the 12 steps. And especially, you know, after working with someone, is helping them to know how to live in the step work and how to grow and give it away to others. I think that's a very important piece there. And then a spiritual life does not include, it says, if a spiritual life does not include his family obligations, may not be so perfect after all. So, you know what, it reminds me of, you know, what I do with people in program, how I treat them is exactly the way I need to be treating my family, with the uttermost respect, with being of service to my family as well, and not forget my family obligations to my family. As well as how I am with program, because I have been at times lopsided where I was so driven into the program that, you know, my family was feeling it. And so I have to find that balance, and God will help me find that balance. And I think about, you know, based on attraction rather than promotion. So in other words, I've got to live, I've got to walk the walk instead of just talking the talk. And I think my time's up, and with that I pass. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Well, thank you, Sherry KB, and I'll now remind our people where we are, page 128, starting with the third paragraph, he is not so unbalanced, through three paragraphs, ending with he has spiritual justification for doing so, and the comments will be on all three. I'll now take names of those who'd like to share.
Sunny S.
Jan B.
This is Julie E.B.
Sunny S. Jan Julie.
B.
E. B. Jan, what was your
CJH.
Last name? CJH, I got that.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen.
Donna W.
Donna W. Any more? We have a pretty good group. All right. I have Sunny, I think it was S, Jan, I didn't get your last initial, Julie E.B., C.J.H., Kathleen O., and Donna W. Sunny, am I sure with it? Was it S?
Yeah, it's Sunny S. Can I be heard?
You can. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So this is Sunny S. in Colorado. It's interesting. I just got a little bit of a flashback reading these paragraphs of the time that I first started getting sober. And I remember I was living with my mom at the time a couple of years ago, and how strong their reaction was in the house, because I was not spending as much time talking about problems with my mother. I was in meetings. I was talking to other people. And I remember there was a lot of blaming for, you know, I think my mom felt abandoned, and there was definitely a change, you know, because my mom and I were very enmeshed, and we were always talking about my alcoholic father, and just this, like, urgency to solve all problems in the world started to disappear between us, you know, and I think that was threatening in itself, because it broke that, like, that connection we had, you know, what we knew, what was so familiar. And yeah, I mean, in working with other people, in being connected to program, I started to develop a more independent identity. I started to get to know myself better, and I started not to rely on her as much, and she had to do a little bit of the same thing. And I look at our relationship 2 years later, and I see how, you know, even she dibbled her toes in recovery after seeing, like, how, like, my growth, you know, and seeing that I was a lot stronger as a person. And now we are, you know, two independent separate women who have an interdependent relationship. So we can still be in connection, we can be loving and supportive, but we don't need to be up on each other's business all the time. Because that was the thing, that was our common theme. It was problem solving, having a sense of urgency, and just sharing the despair that the world was giving us. And so I am glad that I took a little bit of a break to have that spiritual connection, and then, you know, return into a different kind of relationship that may be a little bit more workable, you know, which is me being recovered and program, and, you know, being for her just in a different way. And so with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sunny S. JNB, followed by Julie EB.
Good morning. This is JNB. May I be heard?
Yes, you're being heard. Thank you, Jan.
Wonderful. And these three paragraphs, what really comes to me is it takes time, it takes patience, love and tolerance to go through these stages. And I love how they have listed it as we have in, many of us have experienced dad's elation. We have indulged in spiritual intoxication. I can say that when I first came into program, I mean, it was the answer. It was the answer that I was looking for, searching for, and I was just hungry so much for the answers. And, you know, I got into a part of OA where I had lost 70 pounds in 6 months, and I was a tyrant. I could not understand why people just did not latch onto this program like a like their life depended upon, because that's what I did. And it was so hard for me to see other people's recovery and love them from where they're at. And just love and tolerance was not my creed. And I can really say that I can really relate to the other statement here on page 129, towards the end of the second paragraph. In the midst of an understanding and sympathetic family, these vagaries of dad's spiritual infancy will quickly disappear. I am not familiar with that term, so I looked it up on the phone here. And the definition of that word is the unexpected and the inexplicable change in a situation in someone's behavior. The synonyms are change, fluctuation, variation, quirk, peculiarity, oddity, eccentric, unpredictability, caprice, fable, whim, whimsy, fancy. And that's what happens in an infancy or when there's a big change learning, is it takes some time for the dust to settle, to actually get that maturity. And I'm so grateful for that today and studying this even further. And I think it's just amazing how they have put this in the big book. So thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, JNB. Julie EB, followed by CJH. Julie.
Hi, this is Julie EB, gratefully recovered and abstinent by the grace of God for just one day. And good to know that I'm not as unbalanced as some might think and might have thought, because there is justifiable reason. Putting down the food and getting into recovery has elation. It has an intoxication, joy at our release from a lifetime of frustration, knew no bounds, finally a solution. that's what I want to share with the newcomers, that there is joy at our release from a lifetime of frustration. But of course I knew no bounds because I'm an addict. Of course I think I have something better and superior. One of my character defects that I pray for is, instead of swinging from grandiosity to fear and anxiety, that I be steady, that my higher power remove that defective character and teach me indeed to be steady. And so I'm really, I have a treasure and it's coming to the surface, and I'm very thrilled about that. But there is much to mine still. I've hardly scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends, but I need to mine it. Where am I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? And how can I give it away to you today? I love here that, once again, it's asking, my family needs to be understanding and cooperative. What a demanding individual I am, that I need these kid gloves. And thank goodness I have a loving family that's so glad to see me out of some of the defects and into some other things. But I did see myself as having a superior spiritual life and put down, like I said yesterday, another type of religious life. And I can indeed retreat into just recovery. And now I try and stay in the flow. How funny that we might be lopsided as addicts. But best of all, the best word in this reading for me is that I am average. I'm just one among many. And so long I lived in anxiety because I wasn't super perfect. And I lived in shame because I thought I was flawed. Turns out I'm just average. And if you're average like me, you too can put down the food and get recovered. Thanks for letting me share. My path.
Thank you, Julie E.B., CJH, followed by Kathleen O. CJ.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for your service. So grateful to be here. So grateful for these readings this morning. CJ, compulsive eater, and boy, wow, this first paragraph tells me to look for the good, you know? So other people may see the bad in me. They may point it out. They may be. But my job today is not to be there anymore. The point I have to also remember is this chapter comes after I've worked the 12 steps. So when these pages are talking to me, they're talking to somebody who has worked the steps, who's abstinent, who's in recovery, who's trying to live this life. It's given me the direction on how to treat life after and how to use the steps, really. So the joy at our release, yes, oh gosh, to be lifted from that obsession. These steps, miraculously, by the middle of step 9 for me, it was gone. It was gone, and I am just beyond the grateful. So yeah, there's an intoxication with that freedom, that peace. So many wonderful things shared here this morning. I really kind of came down to that last paragraph, and you know, because I've done the steps and I've got a sponsor and I have a program today, the responsibility for how I'm feeling no longer rests on other people. It rests within what I'm seeing as my capability to go to this God of my understanding and ask for the help, and then use the unity of the program to touch the other lives and say, hey, I'm feeling really distressed here. My family's saying this and this and this, and I'm really bummed out, and I'm, you know, feel like I want to eat, or whatever my deal is with it. You know, that this program gives me a way out of this. That's the elation. You know, that's the spiritual intoxication that keeps me going, that keeps me wanting to keep digging this load, is the relief from this being pent under somebody else's, what they think of me or what they feel about me or what they're doing. But at the same time, you know, when I'm talking to another person and saying, you know, oh, poor me, I'm back in that alcoholic way of thinking, by working the steps and using the help of another person and of course the power of God, I'm able to come out and say, oh, you know what, they're still sick. These people are still sick. And, you know, what can I do? How can I take this criticism and take it to heart, bring it to my God in meditation, ask for the right thought or action? What is it I can do to start to repair some of this stuff, you know, and not to sit in the self-pity anymore and the self-loathing and the oh, poor me's, which I just love this line. So instead of treating the family as he should, he may retreat further into himself and feel as he's got spiritual justification for doing so. Holy cow. Is that me? I can do that in a heartbeat. You know, well, I have to do this for a program and I have to do that for a program, but my family is saying to me, you know, mom, wife, grandma, whatever my position is, sister, you know, hey, hello, we're still here. So the criticism, actually, I can come back to that first paragraph and look for the good. Look for the good because these people love me. They care about me. And if they're sick and suffering, there's nothing I can do about that. But because of this program and this God, I can come from the heart, that language of the heart, right? That freedom to love. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, CJ. Kathleen O, followed by Donna W. Kathleen.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service this morning. And thank you, everyone, for your awesome shares this morning. This is Kathleen O, recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. Currently in Arizona, and oh my goodness, this chapter is just I love it because when it talks, you know, about, and I don't have my big book in front of me because I'm outside, I'm traveling with my husband in an RV, and this, you know, the balancing of all of this, I have to out myself. I am not really balanced, and part of it is my husband is critical of what I do and, you know, in the balance of this program, which is very unfortunate. But what happens is I tend to immerse myself more in program and it does become unbalanced. So that doesn't help things. So I always need to be looking at my part. And, you know, so much of this for me is every day setting my intention, connecting with God with that intention. You know, from the time I wake up, having an attention of you know, connecting with my higher power with prayer and meditation. Even when I eat my meals, you know, what's my intention? How am I going to eat them? You know, am I going to have compulsive behavior around eating them or am I going to not have? And bring God into that intention. And all the way through the day, you know, even when my husband gets critical, it's like I have to keep looking at me. I can't. Someone reminded me yesterday, you know, I point the finger at him and three are pointing back at me. And, I mean, I am just, you know, shout out to everybody who helps me through the challenges I have. You know, I think, you know, in relationships, you know, they can change. You know, we grow and we change. And when we change and grow apart, it makes it very challenging. So, again, you know, acceptance is the answer to all my problems, and I just need to keep showing up and looking at my part and where I can try to make things better for my husband. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen O. And before we have Donna W., I'll just remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 128, the third paragraph. He is not so unbalanced, reading through three paragraphs, ending with he has spiritual justification for doing so, and we're commenting on all three. And now I'll ask Donna W. to share, and then I'll open the lines up for more people to share. Donna.
Good morning. This is Donna W. calling in from Palo Alto, California. Thank you for your service, Mo. I'm so grateful to be abstinent and recovered for today, and I'm so grateful that when things do disturb me, because folks aren't playing by my playbooks, I have the 10th step and all of you to move on and get back in alignment with my higher power and to be of service. And so when I was envisioning, you know, who I might marry, I always thought like we'd have this lovely spiritual life that we'd share. And I was in program before I met my husband, and to be honest, like, you know, I have my spiritual life and he has his. We don't really even talk about it It's not an important part of our relationship. It just is not an issue, and I do my thing, he does his thing. So that's all really simple. To the wives and to the family afterwards, like what I'm really seeing is how I treat myself, you know, that like, oh, you know, I've lost weight, and that, having that lack of patience and tolerance with myself that, oh, I should be perfect now. Or, you know, I've gone through the steps. Life should be a dream now, you know, life should be easy now. So what I'm learning from reading the last chapter and this chapter is like that, you know, one, I cannot reform myself. I need to do the work and let go of the outcome. And a lot of that relationship stuff I need for myself, the patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love is really what I need for myself in my recovery. Because as other fellows in the program said, we don't get beyond human just because we've worked the steps. You know, I still get to show up every day in my very human body and mind and emotions, and I get to feel all my feelings today. So, thankfully I have the steps and the tools to work through what's coming up, so I don't have to carry it and dive into the food again. Just really grateful to be learning every day. I'm praying to be God-seeking rather than self-seeking today, and to be honest and to feel safe. So those are the opposite of my character defects. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna W. And I will now open the lines up for more people who'd like to share.
This is Donna B.
Donna B?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Susan H.
Susan H.
Jody EQ.
Jody EQ. Any more? Okay, we'll go with those three. We might have time for some more after that. Okay, Donna B, followed by Susan H.
Good morning. This is Donna B. calling from Denver, Colorado. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. When I came into program years ago, there used to be a slogan, we're all nuts. Some of us have to be tightened and some of us have to be loosened. My default setting is to do. And especially when I'm uneasy, irritable, restless, discontent, my default setting is to continue to push, to take action. And so what happens for me when I'm uncomfortable is that the part of the program that I hear is to be of service, to call others, to get out of myself. I hear getting out of myself as being making myself available on all these different platforms in which other people can reach out to me if they need help. And what I forget is that in the 11th step where it says you relax and take it easy, we don't struggle, comes after the sentence where we ask God for an intuitive thought, for direction. So for me, to be in a balanced relationship with my family, it does begin with me. It begins with my being aware of my discomfort and going completely against the way that I normally would by doing more and pausing, asking for that inspirational thought, asking for that direction, asking for God to give me everything that I need to solve my problems, so that I can be in a posture of relaxing and taking it easy and not struggling. Because when I'm in that posture, I'm available to see my family, hear my family, interact with my family, and that's so important to me. I have young kids and I'm watching them grow so fast. And when I'm on the phone, my kids don't see the other human being on the other side. They just see that this phone is stuck to my ear all the time. I feel like I'm doing this grand, big service by listening to others, taking 10 steps, being of service while neglecting my children. So this is a, for me, this is this balancing of family and program is something that I live in every single day. Thank you for letting me share my path.
Thank you, Donna B. Susan H., followed by Jody EQ.
This is Susan H., a recovering compulsive overeater. Thanks, everyone, for your share. And thank you for leading my. But, you know, the one thing that came to me was a saying that I learned at first, the 12 steps, which was to be right-sized. And I always think that, you know, that, and it means twofold, just as these three paragraphs outline is, one, it helps us have strength in what we do have and with our spirituality and giving what we have. But then at the same time, we know our size in the world and that we're not God and that other people are being led by their own higher power. And that always kind of helps me when I am confused as to what to do. I always hear that voice that says, you know, just to be right sized, to be present, but you don't have to be overwhelming anyone else. And the other thing that these paragraphs tell me is how much, how just awkward it is. It's a bit like being a teenager, right? So when we first come into the adulthood of emotional sobriety, you know, it's just a bit awkward. We don't, you know, we overcompensate on one end and overcompensate on the other. And sure enough, we realize that the world's a big place and it's not always a fair place. It's not going to be perfect for us at all, at all times. And so we're going to have to make sure that we're just keeping our own side of the street clean and that we grow into adulthood. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Susan H. and Jody EQ. Your turn.
Thank you, Mo. Good morning, everyone. This is Jody EQ, gratefully recovered in California, recovered compulsive overeater. This is one of my favorite metaphors here, the gaunt prospector who's mining for gold and isn't finding it for a long, long time. Just like me, you know, trying to find recovery from my disease and not finding it. Finally, I find it, and I'm elated, and I want to, you know, I'm stingy with it. I'm focused on it. I got myself, you know, I've been digging for gold for years. And I've been ignoring and neglecting my family while I've been focused, hyper-focused on finding this gold. And then when I find it, I'm hyper-focused on sharing it with other compulsive overeaters, etc. But my family is neglected the whole way through, or mine was. And so I have to realize that this gold that I have found needs to be shared not only with other compulsive overeaters, but also with my family. I have to put myself in their shoes. And I didn't do that. And I'm divorced as a result. And now I live with housemates. And it's no different with my housemates. I need to be considerate of them. Not be constantly on the phone. I need to do my part. I need to contribute. So yes, finding this balance is a challenge, but we can do it thanks to the grace of our higher power. I also like this, how it says, I'm an average man as a family member, as, you know, unless I'm a monk or a priest or something, or a hermit, I am in relationship with other people. I'm an average person. And my family obligations, my community obligations will never go away. So I have to find a way, as we're talking about, is finding this balance of program and all my affairs. And again, I can only do that with the grace of my higher power. And with that, I pass. Thank you all.
Well, thank you, Jody EQ. And I'll just remind everybody where we are again, because we have time for a few more shares. We're on page 128, the third paragraph. He is not so unbalanced, reading through three paragraphs.
Irene M.
Okay, good. He has spiritual justification for doing so. I'll take you, Eileen
MJ.
M. And I didn't hear that. Say it again.
MJ.
Hey. MJ?
Yes, please.
Okay. Eileen.
Christine M.
Okay, maybe we'll stop there. Christine M. Okay. Eileen, I think it was J. Help me, Eileen.
Oh, Eileen M.
M. Okay. Thank you, Eileen. You're on.
Sure. Hi, this is Eileen M., gratefully recovered in New Hampshire. And I'm looking at this line where it says, he may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life. I just focused on that because that to me is a warning against complacency. Because the big book tells us that we cannot rest on our laurels, and that is so easy to do. And what I mean is in regard to working an 11th step every day. For me, that's very hard. It's very hard for me to do that consistently, but yet, it was shared so beautifully on the 7 a.m. meeting about that, sitting in meditation and letting God direct my thinking for the day. I mean, that is so essential to, this way of living, is to just, to get out of that self-will and to just let my higher power guide my day and how I'm going to act. That's just so important. And, as someone said earlier, it takes time to get spiritual maturity. There's stages of spiritual recovery, and, it's so easy to when I first recovered, I was on this, they call it the pink cloud, you're high, on life, and it's just, we have to maintain the new order of things, like it said in Bill's story, we maintain the new order of things. And it's a daily practice. It's one day at a time. And just so grateful to be, learning this and to be studying this text with everyone. It's really wonderful. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen M. And was it MJ followed by Christine M? Was there an MJ?
Yes. Okay. I just want to thank you. This is Michelle Jordan from Arkansas, MJ. And
okay.
I want to say to all of you, thank you again so very, very much, because what's happening is I started the program, the OA program, less than 2 weeks ago, and I've gone to four meetings, and I've only been vision for you for, this is my second time, once Friday and once today, and I have been so overwhelmed with just the multiple books, the calls, the stories, and I was feeling not good. I was not a cloud of any kind. I ignored my husband completely this morning because I was looking at something. I'm like, oh my goodness. So again, I'm brand new to this whole beautiful road that I'm on, the road to recovery with all of you. And I needed to hear this morning that, okay, I can slow down, I can relax, and because I feel like I'm on a big landslide or maybe even an avalanche because I'm being suffocated all of a sudden. But so thank you so very much. I need to be in balance, and I need to just breathe and slow down. I'm not in a hurry to do this. And I just want to thank you, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Michelle J. Christine M.
Hi, it's Christine M. from Massachusetts, a grateful compulsive eater, recovered. So what jumped out at me in this paragraph is a few things. He is not as unbalanced as they might think. I couldn't understand. It took me a while to get to the fact that my nature of being unbalanced really was a spiritual malady. And it wasn't until I got into this program and really started to work the steps, particularly 10, 11, and 12, did I begin to experience relief from the frustration that I had no I was released from frustration that knew no bounds. You know, I think of the bedevilments and continuing to eat and not understanding why I was eating. But it wasn't until I looked at the book and went through it that I really got the limitless load, which will pay dividends. However, I have to give this away. I have to be in service. I have to help other people. So my husband's a little bit irritated that I seem to be always on the phone, you know, at 8 o'clock at night doing a step 10. But last night we had a turning point. He said, oh, you're doing service. Like, he got it just as much as I get it. If I don't give this away, I'm going to remain in my selfishness, my self-pity, my dishonesty, my resentment. I need to be outward-facing with God, because really, I'm not a religious person, but I've become a very spiritual person. And this is the solution for what I have, which is a profound spirituality. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Christine M. Well, we still have 5 minutes to go, so I have time for a few more shares.
Melanie C.?
Melanie C.? Anyone else? All right. We'll go with you, Melanie.
Okay, thanks so much.
Oh, who was that?
Nereya R.
Okay, we'll take you, Nereya. Okay, the two of you take like 2.5 minutes. We'll do it.
You betcha. Thanks so much. Well, my name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I was looking over all of this, and I had a great deal of intensive time up front in what needed to be addressed in my disease, and my whole family fell into line. I don't know how willing they were, but they certainly appeared to be very willing and on board. That's been the case for my husband the entire time that I've been in recovery, for sure. He's never said anything to the contrary one way or another, and in fact, his behavior shows that he supports it in any way. I've been very blessed in that fashion, but I wanted to take a little different view because of the way I was reading this today and over the span of recovered time that I have been so blessed to have had happen to me. And it put on a different shift in my thinking, and I was going with that first line too. He is not so unbalanced as they might think. And I thought, well, what would that mean if I'm not so unbalanced during that really intensive time, or places and periods of times where a particularly difficult character defect had the best of me, and I did a tremendous amount of work over 18 months to be able to have God have access to me with that, and nothing was shifting or changing, and I wasn't as pleasant as I'd like to be. What would that mean if I was in balance? And over the scheme of things, over the lifespan of time and recovery, what I have come to find, in fact, it was part of the entire journey, and that's what I'm seeing here. And they're kind of giving tips to the family to show ahead of time, you know, father's going to be this way in the beginning, but as he evolves, he's going to be this way. And as it continues to go on, it's going to look like this. And it was really freeing to be able to finally sense that, because I was imbalanced all my life. That was a term that was used for Melanie all of her life. And now I'm seeing it really is a continuation of the journey. It's going to look like that, Melanie, in the beginning, and then it's going to move to these kinds of things. Sure, have conversations with your family, certainly about it, and do your tweaking and things like that. But it really isn't anything I could have avoided if I wanted to have any other kind of a recovery than I have today. And with that, I pass.
Well, thank you, Melanie C. And Nereya K., you have a good
three
minutes.
Yeah, can you
hear me? Yes, I can.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Nereya R., recovered compulsive overeater in Moscow. I wanted to share just on the first part where it says, you know, once you find the program, it's kind of like finding gold or striking gold. And I know that for me, my journey, like finding the rooms and, you know, finding a vision for you and finding the program has been a journey that's taken about 10 years. I thought, you know, this idea of finding something and then getting elated and overjoyed and holding on to it. You know, I did it so many times in the past with other things that I had perceived as being solutions, that when I came into the program, I was quite skeptical. And now it's going on my 2 years, and I'm finding that I am holding on to the program and this idea of finding balance with family. I don't have immediate family nearby. I'm not married. I don't have children. But my personal, interpersonal relationships did suffer. Like, I didn't speak to my father for quite a few years. And, you know, I always got in spats with my family because I felt that no one ever understood me. And since being in recovery, I've been, someone said, right-sized. And, you know, I have been put right-sized. And I can sit down with my family and I can talk to them and we can have civilized discussions and conversations. And, you know, I guess the promises, you know, that show us that if we work this program, that, you know, our life will become infinitely better. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Nareya Kay. And I think we'll close our meeting. We will now, I want to thank all those who shared and all those who gave service on this meeting. So we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And we'll, let me see, Eileen M., please read a vision for you.
This is Eileen M. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.